Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com and now on canvr.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar. Others promise the moon, they deliver the sun. Coming up, we'll hear from the orange and black skipper, and we'll chat with our regular guest throughout the 2017 season, John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. But first, let's hear from our sponsors. We all know the orange and black could use an extra insurance run from time to time. And when it comes to business and commercial insurance, personal insurance, or life and health insurance, we could all use a dependable insurance agency to navigate the obstacles that get in our way. Mitchell & Mitchell is that dependable insurance agency. Whether it's business and commercial insurance, life and health insurance, or personal insurance, including auto, home, renters, RV, boat, flood, earthquake, and umbrella, Mitchell & Mitchell Insurance Agency is there for you. Oh, and tack on financial planning to the list. That comes in handy, just like that insurance run. Call Mitchell & Mitchell today at 888-512-8878. That's 888-512-8878. Or go to MitchellandMitchell.com. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. Now it's time to catch up with Giants manager Bruce Bochy. Bruce, tell us about some of the competitions in camp and what you're looking for, especially left field with Parker and Williamson.
Well, it's going to be competitive with these guys. We've got a lot of experienced guys battling for a spot on this team, and two young guys there with Parker and Williamson. And, yeah, we probably won't make a call till very, very late in the spring. But we feel like we have some good choices and have some depth here, but some very difficult calls.
Same thing at the number five spot in the rotation. I mean, what do you want to see from Matt Cain? How much of a leash does he have this year?
Well, we just want to see Matt kind of get back on track and, throw quality strikes. He's a four-pitch guy that I think the further away he's gotten from surgery, the better he's going to be, and the more time he gets out there, the more he should get comfortable with, we call it almost a new arm after the surgery. But obviously we pull for him with what he's done for us. But there's some stiff competition there with Block and Beattie, these guys who are throwing the ball very well.
How about when you look at having a new closer, how much does that make your life easier right from day one of spring training with the roles as they get established in the bullpen?
Yeah, well, anytime you get an elite closer like Mark Melanson, it makes life a lot easier. And I've seen what it's like not to have that. But it's easier to build down, field at sixth, seventh, and eighth versus at ninth. So he's going to enable us to do that. And same with the bullpen, as I talked about with the position players. We got some stiff competition going on there and some tough calls.
Thanks, Boach. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's Giants manager Bruce Bochy in a conversation I had with him at Scottsdale Stadium this week. Coming up, we'll hear from John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. A new art book about the lives of minor league baseball players is coming out soon called Fantasy Life, and the author Tabitha Soren will be joining us during the season to talk about the book. In the meantime, check out her lecture on Sunday, March the 19th at 4:30 p.m. in Scottsdale. So if you happen to be going to the Giants games in spring training, right near Scottsdale Stadium. There's a Civic Center Auditorium, and that's where Tabitha Soren will be giving her lecture Sunday, March the 19th, 4:30, as she discusses stories on her 15-year project on America's favorite pastime. John, you know, they have named a boulevard after you here in Scottsdale, and I'm actually staying close by. So that's pretty cool. John Shea, you know, popular all over the Bay Area and in Arizona. Are you enjoying your time here so far?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't get a piece of the action. I don't own Shea Homes, nor do I have a stake in the street. But, yeah, it's been funky. The first week or so I was here, it seems like the Bay Area weather. There was rain, there was overcast, and only now is the sun trying to beat through. But usually I'm just used to 85, 90 every day. It was kind of refreshing.
Yeah, it was. You know, you notice little things in spring training, like a Chris Marrero hitting a couple home runs early on and swinging for the fences pretty much every time he's up there. And Matt Cain, you know, sort of pitching for his life in a way. I mean, to get that number five spot, whereas, you know, most starters this time of the year, they're just trying to get their work in. They're working on new pitches. But do you notice that with Cain? I mean, and what do you think about this number five competition in the rotation?
It is odd that a man who's making $20-plus million is fighting for his baseball life to remain not the one starter, the five starter. And really, Matt Cain, you know, he signed the big contract, and right away he had that huge year in 2012. He was the ace. He took over for Lincecum, who went to the bullpen in the postseason. And Cain was dynamic in the postseason, and they won the World Series. And slowly but surely, his career path has gone southward. And suddenly the injuries and the elbow and unable to bounce back and the velocity and the command, it's just not there. So really, this is his final chance. And I imagine they're going to give the job to him. He had a nice game Monday, his best outing of the spring. But Ty Block is waiting in the wings, obviously out of options. He could start in AAA. He did come in that game during an inning as if to say, hey, maybe he could be some kind of long reliever. But the Giants are just weighing all the options, and they're really hoping Cain is going to be the guy. Now, if he is the Cain of 2015, 2014, they're going to put a limit on this, and they're going to say, hey, we'll give you 4 to 6 weeks. And if you don't show that you're somewhat of the Cain from 2012, 2013 even, we'll take that, then I think they got to move on. They have, in players last year of big contracts, kind of said goodbye or just endured it by, you know, going to the bullpen, whatever, disabled list. But really, this is his final crack at staying a Giant and staying a, you know, somewhat successful Giant.
Yeah, and they have other options, like you said. I mean, Ty Block is kind of waiting in the wings. They've even got Tyler Beede, who was a AA last year but led the league in ERA. I mean, and he's got great stuff. Who knows, during this season, it seems like the Giants have kind of, you know, stepped it up as far as the depth that they have as far as some pitchers that could come in.
Yeah, and it's not such an important position in the rotation that they're going to live or die by this particular move. I mean, 1 through 4, they're still as solid. You look at that division, it's Giant Dodger rotations, and everybody else is a distant third, fourth, and I don't even know if the Padres have a rotation, fifth. So, you know, Bud Black is making a lot of noise in Colorado, the first pitching coach they've ever had to run the Rockies. You know, and he keeps talking about all these young arms are going to surprise you. And, you know, knowing Bud Black, he might be right to an extent. Whether they can do it over the long grind of the season is another matter. And obviously Shelby Miller and Zach Greinke, they're not going to be as bad as they were last year in Arizona. Patrick Corbin as well, and they're going to have more depth. They got to be better in that rotation than they were last year. But still, I think it's coming down to Giants, Dodgers, and it's all about those two rotations. And right now, you could suggest that the Giants might be deeper, depending on how good Samardzija is. You know, and Cueto, obviously, and Bumgarner are going to be rock solid. And I, you know, when you look at Cain, you say, well, you know, they could flip the coin on that. They could go either way. They could endure. They could wait for him to fail, because it's early enough in the season that they can roll the dice with them. But I think after 6 weeks, forget about it. If he's not producing, if he's going 3-4 innings, they got to make the move.
More with San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea in just a moment. A little reminder, each week during the season, we'll be giving away a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. All you have to do is ask a question for one of our guests, and if your question is chosen, you'll receive a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. To send your questions in, email us at thesportsvirus@gmail.com or on Facebook, thesportsvirus.com page, and please like us while you're there. You know, it's interesting what you were talking about earlier with Kane, because if you go back a few years kind of thing on his success and you look at the baseball card, well, it's the same thing with some of these other players in camp. I mean, Bobby Evans the other day in the dugout when I was talking to him, I was saying, you know, you got some interesting names in here. And he said, well, yeah, it would be pretty good if they were the same guy they were a few years ago. You know, you look at like an Aaron Hill or a Jimmy Rollins and Michael Morse, you have to kind of turn the page back a little. But do those kind of guys help? I mean, you're looking at depth that maybe, you know, a couple of those guys make the team can really help you because of the experience they have?
Now, if you look at the depth last year, the backup infielder, Adrianza, the man just couldn't hit. I mean, fine, he could pick it at short, he could pick it at second. But now you have the intrigue of Jimmy Rollins here. And a funny story, in Monday's game, Bochy had Rollins as the shortstop. And Rollins went up to him and said, listen, I can do that. Put me at second today. That's what I'm going to have to know. I'm going to have to prove to you that I could play. Second base. If he makes his team, it's going to be as a utility guy. I was watching him the entire day in the pregame, and it was fascinating. Here's a guy who's played his entire career at shortstop, you know, world champion, an MVP, and one of the few guys in baseball that you and I could actually interview and not look up to. He's actually shorter than the both of us, right? And just a great player, great man, local guy from the East Bay, grew up a Ricky fan, loved the A's, loved Barry Bonds. And spends a lot of time with Willie Mays in the clubhouse, by the way. They got along right away. You know, it's fun to listen to those guys talk. And Rollins was telling me that the big difference between short and second, and he never knew this, why would he, is when you're covering second, say on a double play, you have no idea where the runner is. He's behind you. At shortstop, you could do anything to get out of his way. And you did, because you're Jimmy Rollins. You know, you're a gymnast. You could jump over him, sidestep him, or put a knee in him, do anything you want. But now suddenly the guy is running behind you, and you don't know if he's 5 feet, 10 feet, or 1 foot behind you. And to protect your body, which way do you go? He was praising Jeff Kent by saying, that's a guy who just always got out of the way. I tried to get him, but I couldn't. He was too quick. And that was, it was pretty good praise about Jeff Kent. You wouldn't think. But one thing Jeff Kent did was turn a double play. I mean, we knew how good he was once we saw Ray Durham follow him, because that man wasn't very good at staying in on double plays. But Kent was. And Jimmy Rollins, I mean, he's darn near 40 years old, and he's learning this new position. It's really cool to see. So you go back to your question. I think you can't count him out at all. Now, if he hits a little bit, he made two diving, attempts, and he caught, you know, both of them at second base Monday. So he's got a couple of gold gloves. We're talking about Omar Vizquel in the clubhouse, who has what, 11, but Rollins is no slouch. I mean, he's a wonderful player. Obviously, Vizquel, I think, is a Hall of Famer. But Rollins, an MVP, the Gold Glove Award winner, world champion, and now he's here back in the Bay trying to win a job as a backup infielder, and Joe Panik has been fantastic with him. Panik, who's, you know, starting off having a real nice spring here, won a Gold Glove last year. So even though he's in his 20s and, 10, 12, 13 years younger, he's really helping out Jimmy Rollins at second base.
Yeah, I mean, that really is something when you think about it, a young guy helping. And Panik, I mean, he was a shortstop coming up. They move him over to second base. Like you said, the Gold Glove. It's amazing to me how these athletes can make that transition. I remember Michael Young did it successfully with Texas. But when you're older, like Rollins, I mean, J-Roll, that's got to be, you know, even more difficult. You know, the Giants are doing the same thing with Christian Arroyo. Here's a kid, you know, he's whatever, 21, 22 years old. and they're moving him from short. He's over at third because shortstop obviously is not open in San Francisco. What do you think about that move? And, you know, people are talking about Arroyo because he's had a great time with the bat, you know, double A. He's got triple A sitting there, but, you know, does he ever get a chance for the Giants this year? Who knows?
The Giants love their shortstops. Obviously, they drafted Crawford as a shortstop. They drafted Joe Panik as a shortstop. They drafted Matt Duffy as a shortstop. And they drafted Arroyo as a shortstop. And only Crawford has stayed. So I think it's a great move because third base is going to be the open spot. That and left field. Center field, right field, first base, second base, shortstop, catcher. Those guys are all signed or under control of the Giants for many years to come here. So what's open? Third base, Arroyo. Not the best defensive shortstop in the world, but a primary prospect who could probably play. I mean, I talked to Brian Sabian about this once. You know, he coached college ball before he started working for the Yankees in Florida. And he said when he recruited kids out of high school, he'd always recruit shortstops. Because those kids, he said, could play anywhere. You put them in center, put them in right, put them in first, put them in second. They can catch. Buster Posey was a shortstop in college, right?
Yeah.
And a closer. And you could play anywhere, right? And somebody, the coach's kid, the assistant coach, made him a catcher. And now he's on the road to the Hall of Fame. So there's something to be said about these former shortstops moving. You know, A-Rod moved over to third. Biggio was a middle-of-the-order guy, middle of the field, catcher, second base, center field. You know, Robin Yount played a couple of positions, short and center. So it seems like those are the athletes. You look at Little League, well, who's the best athlete? Probably the shortstop. Same in high school. By the time you get to college, maybe you're playing somewhere else. But it seems every one of these guys was a shortstop. Brandon Belt would say he's a shortstop, a left-handed shortstop, right? I'm good enough to do it. So, but yeah, I think Arroyo, I think you'll see him maybe as the opening day guy in 2018 at third base.
Right. Well, with third base, I mean, it could be like the old Abbott and Costello skit where, you know, who's on first, what's on second? I don't know. Third base. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe during the year. It depends on what Nunez does. And then in left field, it's really more, I don't know, because there is that competition with Jarrett Parker and Mac Williamson. But, you know, how much do you put the emphasis on the fact that Williamson has options? He could be sent down, whereas Parker can't. He could be claimed by another team. Obviously, you know, in that situation, Parker has to have a pretty big edge, right?
That's one of the reasons I think you'll see Parker as the opening day left fielder, unless they throw a lefty, I don't know. But Arizona, probably not. So, I think that's one reason. Another reason is Parker has so many more minor league at-bats, so much more experience, including at the top level in AAA. Now, you would say he's a left-hander. The Giants have a ton of left-handed batters. Belt at first, Panik at second, Crawford, Span. You know, they all hit left-handed. So why do you want another? Well, the good thing about that is Bochy doesn't worry about those guys because most, if not all of them, on a consistent basis, hit lefties as well as righties. Now, Parker is not in that group. He does not hit lefties as well as he hits righties. So I'm guessing that they could open the season with a platoon of Parker facing right-handers as a left-handed batter and a more experienced veteran. Who might that be? I don't know. As the complement in a platoon in left field.
Well, that could be Michael Morse. We'll see how he swings the bat. Interesting story how he was signed, you know, basically at a conversation at Hunter Pence's wedding. Yeah. Chris Marrero, you know, he's showing some power, although, you know, I don't know what he's like out in left field. And Ruggiano is another guy who's kind of an interesting piece, right?
Yeah, and they all have some pop. Watching batting practice Monday, Morse hit a ball, and we're looking out over at Scottsdale Stadium now, that hit the lights on this light pole out here in center field, and it was amazing. This is, you know, just somebody's throwing marshmallows, but still, how does a man hit a ball that high, that far? That is well beyond the left field wall, and it's got to be what, 200 feet high, 150 feet high, whatever that is, and he hit one of those lights up there. It was just amazing. So he came out of the game. And talking to him, he said he couldn't believe it. And he said it's just part of the vibe as a guy who is so relaxed, more relaxed than any time in his career, because he's made money, he's had fame, he hit that home run to help win the pennant in 2014, right before Ishikawa's walk-off. And now it's, well, if I don't make the Giants, even if I hit, 500, I'm going home. This is not, do I still have it? If I can't make it here, I'm going somewhere else. No, this is the Giants are bust. He's not going to the minor leagues. He's not doing any of that. If he doesn't make the opening day roster, he's going home. And he's said he's never felt that comfort where he could just feel at ease. Like, it doesn't matter. If he goes home, that's great. He's got a family. If he stays here, that's great. He's got family here. So there's no pressure on him. And he's feeling, like he says, better than he's ever felt in his career. He said if he felt like this every other year, he'd just be soaring with success in this game. He said, I wish I had this mental frame of mind throughout my career.
By the way, that home run he hit, in batting practice, whatever, it might have hit a light standard. 10 years from now, it'll be even further. Those stories always get embellished. I remember when I was in Bend, Oregon in the Northwest League, and somebody was talking about a Jose Canseco home run when he was in the Northwest League, and they said it went two hops to the Chinese restaurant. And I was going, come on, the Chinese restaurant's like, three blocks away. It kept getting longer and longer over the years, I guess, right?
Yeah, though those mountain ranges are within his distance. Right. They're only, 17 miles away.
Right. To finish up, I wanted to talk to you about some of these new rules in baseball. For one, you wrote a story about Willie McCovey saying that, the intentional walk, why are they even bothering with it? It's really not going to save much time. I totally agree with Willie Mack on that one. And then with replay, they're saying the manager would have 30 seconds to decide. And then, a certain amount of time, I don't know how many minutes, what they said back in New York. But I really think the manager doesn't need hardly any time. Is it 2 minutes?
Yeah.
I think the manager just could decide in less than 30 seconds. Because when he sees it on the field, I think we waste a lot of time with, oh, is he going to challenge it? And then it's just taking way too long. What do you think about that and also the intentional walk rule?
Well, I think the pressure isn't on the manager. The pressure is on your video guy. The pressure is on Sean Dunstan. So while the manager could say, well, I think he did this, I think he did that, he's not going to make the call until he gets the call back from Sean Dunstan, who had time to review it. So really the pressure is on the video guys who are buried deep in the clubhouse with all the video equipment. And sometimes the bigger the game, the more exposure, the more camera angles you're going to have, and then you'll need a little bit more time. And that's especially true in the postseason. But for a regular season game, I think Sean Dunstan has to up his game. he if he has 30 seconds, which I spoke with a manager the other day. I said, well, isn't 30 seconds a long time? He said, it is until you're under the gun to make a decision, and boom, 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 you have to come quick. Did you see enough angle? Then yes or no, and you could ruin your challenge. But I think that it's a good thing. I think 30 seconds is still too long. I still think that managers should just say yes or no. Forget the video guy in the room. Just have it up to the manager to say if he did or didn't. Because you talk about the intentional walk, which is a minute and a half, and it happens every 3-4 games in the National League. Very rare. But the replay is really slowing down the game.
It is. I want to say this, John. I think that you want to see calls that are, really obviously bad eliminated, the egregious call. So that you would think to the naked eye, you would see and you'd want to challenge it. If you're going to go into a video game, well, then it's different. You're slowing it down. You're doing all that. I just think it's sort of a totally different ball game when you're talking about that.
And it's whenever we hear, well, that review took a minute 17. Well, no, it didn't, because you don't consider the time the manager said thumbs up or thumbs down. You don't consider the time two managers have to run off the field and put those silly headphones on. Okay, that's when the review starts. And listen, I think those guys in New York need to start prematurely and say, that might be reviewed, let's start looking at it now, rather than waiting for the thumbs up, and then the umpires come up, make the phone call, long distance operator, New York, collect call for, you're a fan, you're sitting through this. I said, come on, I don't think you need 2 minutes. It's a 2-minute max for those guys in New York to come up with a decision. Make it 1 minute. Let's move it along. Let's make it, 15 seconds for the manager to come up with a yay or nay on whether to challenge. But I think that's the one that's really killing this pace of game, not the intentional walk. Intentional walks I always thought were cool. I once saw Willie McCovey at Candlestick Park. It was just, you know, it's freezing. It's the eighth inning. It's the bottom of the eighth. And I'm a kid at Candlestick. Don't tell Willie I said that. And twilight of his career, and he's announced as a pinch hitter. So he comes out of the dugout, and you know those long 6'4", that frame of his with the long strides, and everyone was just going crazy. He comes up to the plate, and they intentionally walk him. And then those long strides, he walks up the, you know, took forever, but I loved it. And then he got to first base, and then he got replaced by a pinch runner. And those long strides coming back to the dugout, standing ovation, you know, McCovey, just so beloved. And, you know, he didn't do a darn thing, but so much respect for a guy who, for those four pitches, for that 1 minute, 1 minute and a half of time, he was the most dangerous man in the whole stadium, the most feared hitter on the premises. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. And you know what? That's kind of cool. That's a sign of respect that, you know, unless you're the eighth hitter and the pitcher's coming up, okay, whatever, we don't care about those guys. But if you're a 3-4-5 hitter in an important moment and you're intentionally walked, you know, let the guy stand up there and watch four wide ones and let the fans boo. You know, let the chicken dance song get queued up. Let them put the rubber chicken. They don't do that anymore. But but I, you know, it's just not enough of a time saver, like Willie McCovey said. And he was the dean before Barry Bonds came along, because he set records in, you know, most intentional walks in a season. And I mean, he Sparky Anderson, the stories he told. He would come to Candlestick and just put up four fingers and say, Willie, you know, before the game, he's saying, putting four fingers up to Willie, I'm not pitching you today, Willie. I mean, managers were – and he's a Hall of Fame manager with the big red machine, and he was afraid to face Willie. So anyway, it's – you know, the David Ortizes, the great hitters, you know, throughout the game over the years, especially in the National League, I think there was an art to it. And sometimes those pitchers airmailed it to the backstop, and somebody scored, or somebody advanced from first to second, or you had to be on your toes, which Angel Pagan wasn't at one time last year. The guy on an intentional walk threw it to the backstop, and Angel was resting at third, and Bochy, you know, still, I think, is upset about him not hustling home. But anyway, a lot of things could happen, and we're not going to see that anymore.
I agree with you, especially if you're Mark Wohlers or Rick Ankiel. You never know. John, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. And look forward to having you again as our regular guest throughout the season. The fans really enjoy it. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be a great year.
That's San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. I want to thank him and Giants manager Bruce Bochy for joining us from Scottsdale Stadium. More interviews from Arizona coming up. And on Monday, we'll chat with Barry Bloom from MLB.com. A lot to talk about with him. He covered Barry Bonds very closely, and we'll catch up on some stories about Bonds. Also, we'll hear from Ty Block, who is vying for the number 5 spot in the Giants rotation. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on the sportsvirus.com and now on KNBR.com.